Greetings, fellow lovers of food from fair to fine. This is Paulo Espanola, and you are listening to episode 31 of Hidden Apron Radio, where we take a deeper dive into the stories cooked deep into our food. Pun fully intended. Here, we believe that food can be used to solve most of the world's problems, and as a universal language, has the ability to connect people to themselves and each other in the best and most delicious ways possible. Today is the second installment of our new Filipino kitchen series, so in case you missed our last episode with chefs Robert Menor, Rodelio, the food Buddha, Aglibot, and Joanne Boston, we've been sitting down with the various co-authors of the new Filipino kitchen cookbook that I've been honored to be a part of and was published by Agate Suri this past September. Just as the recipes in the book, the people writing them and a reason why we're sitting down with them are of such diverse backgrounds, really challenging the idea that Filipino food, or any food for that matter, is just one thing. Today on the show, we have the Villavicencio sisters, Katrina and Christina, who, together with their friends Paolo Dunca and Aniceto J.R. Comia, started a supper club in D.C. called Timpla, where they feature modern takes on Filipino dishes they grew up with while juggling jobs in catering and art/marketing. The Timpla brand has now expanded to include the sisters' writing and art online, while Paolo and JR work full-time at Kaliwa, an upscale Filipino-Thai-Korean restaurant in D.C. Joining them is Alexa Alfaro, who dropped out of her engineering degree 22 weeks before graduation. You can imagine what that does in a Filipino family. To open Milwaukee's only Filipino food truck, Meet on the Street, with her brother back in 2014. They've since opened a brick and mortar and enjoyed considerable success with customers raving about their adobos, barbecues, and turon, which is quite the accomplishment considering that they've brought a tropical cuisine into the frozen tundra. Of course, I'm biased because I actually went to school in Wisconsin and like it's the coldest place I've ever been to besides Minnesota and got it to a successful place. If I had to pick a single word for today's show, it would be expectations. We ruminate, complain, and in between glasses of wine, explore the many expectations heaped upon us in the course of our work, be it expectations around Filipino food, what it should look like, taste like, how it should be made, or even cost, expectations around our age and the need to balance respectful obedience and forging our own path, especially in the context of the immigrant experience. And expectations around gender, something that I don't get to cover much on this show, but I'm glad we talked about in the wake of the Me Too movement that took on its own form in the food industry, and the fortuity that a majority of my co-authors who I've been touring with and are getting the long overdue spotlight are female, which I think is rightfully so, as the keepers and innovators, for lack of a better word, of our cuisine have always been immigrant women. Of note to me was how we think about our relationships with women in and out of the kitchen and where we draw the line between being demanding at work and just plain inappropriate abuse. I apologize in advance for some sound issues. I was using a new mic I was not familiar with, and we had to do a little bit of cleanup. You'll hear right after the break, we jump into the topic of how do we change the culture around women in restaurants. So if it sounds a bit weird, that is why. With that said, please enjoy this conversation with Christina, Katrina, and Alexa. Katrina, Christina, and Alexa, welcome to Hidden Apron Radio at 10 p.m. after we're in like food coma. Where I wanted to start is actually a bit of a history lesson, because the reason we're even here is because of this book. So I wanted to start with that. If you could tell us how this book even came to be on your side, like how did Jackie contact you and what were you doing at the time of her reaching out? So if you guys want to start.
So this is Christina. I'm part of Timpla. We work I'm working with Katrina, Aniceto, and Paolo. The four of us are part of a supper club that we started doing in our houses in Petworth, DC, and in the 3 years that we've done it since, Paolo and Aniceto, they've become chefs at a restaurant. Me and Katrina have branched into art and writing. And then we still try to do the supper clubs every once in a while. So at the time that Jackie reached out to us was in the summer of 2016 when we were right in the middle of doing our supper clubs every month. So we were gaining a lot of, I don't know, popularity or something.
Attention
around like the DC community around it and around like some of the Filipino food movement community. We had Maria Vanessa come to one of our supper clubs, and she had looked at our blogs and some of the things we'd written and also came to our supper club. And I believe it was her that recommended us to Jackie.
Is Maria Vanessa like Amusing Maria? So the
Amusing Maria. Okay, yeah, gotcha. Yeah. So that was how we first, I think, got the introduction from Jackie.
When she reached out to you, were you surprised?
I think we were, this is Katrina, I think we were surprised, but also I don't want to sound too confident, but again, like we were starting to get a lot of interesting comments from some people. So it's not like I was expecting to get asked to be contributed to a book, but we were starting to feel the effects of creating this new Filipino food-based endeavor that people haven't seen before, and a lot of people are curious. So
yeah,
I'm not saying that I am so good that I should be asked to write a book, but it was part of a lot of many great positive feedback that we had gotten in the past few years.
I'm going to go back to that interesting comments part later, because I know, like, and we've already talked about it even before this, that comments aren't always positive, especially if you're not doing, like, the traditional, like, Schaefer dishes, right?
Yes.
But before we get to that, Alexa, you.
Okay, I'm Alexa Alfaro. I'm with Meat on the Street Food Truck. We also have a brick and mortar in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. So at the time, we had just had our food truck. It was about 2 years old, and this guy named Ray De La Cruz, who like made us jump in front of our truck to take pictures and grabbed random Asian-looking people that were like at this event we were at to like pose in front of our truck, did this interview with us.
Yeah.
He writes for Positively Filipino. If you've heard of it, it's like an email blog type of thing. Yeah.
Anyway, based in Milwaukee or?
Based in Chicago. So he came down, checked out the truck, whatever. So he wrote an interview about us based on that. And then Jacqueline saw it and asked if I would do another in-depth interview about like my experiences as I went to the Philippines in fifth grade for 10 weeks and just what I remember. So I wrote this very in-depth interview that got a lot of social media hits and feedback. So after that, I was invited to participate in submitting a story for the book, which was really exciting because it seemed legit at the time. I mean, it was 2 years though, so I didn't really know if it was going to happen or not. But like at the time, it was like a big deal for us. Yeah, it was just like, oh my gosh, this is crazy. And what she had said turned out to actually happen, which is cool. Mm-hmm. But like at the time, pitching the story, I was like, this is amazing. I had no idea what went into a book. I still really don't.
Yeah.
On a very minor level, yeah.
It's funny you mentioned that.
By the time she reached out to us, I think she had maybe already gotten like 10, 15 people. Chef Chris Comerford was on there, Adobe Rose from London, and like a few other international people. So I was like, this is something bigger than what I am.
Yeah.
But that's actually why I was skeptical, because I was like, man, these names are really big, man. I was like, this is a legit book. Are you sure you don't have the right? I think you want Paolo, like DC Paolo. You got the wrong one.
Yeah.
It's funny you mentioned the whole, like, it's 2 years ago, because when we were recording the San Francisco one, and we did the readings, because I think Rodelio, Chef Rodelio, had, like, only read his stories. Same like you guys, he only read it, like, that weekend.
It's all really on time to do it, yeah.
Like, while he was reading it, he was like, damn, did I write this?
Yeah.
I was like, what the heck? Put some more context into it, right? Because one thing that really came out of the book as I read through the stories is that the context of Filipino food for each writer was so different, right? Like, for me, it was the whole Saudi Arabia. I mean, for Delena, who is coming to the launch for tomorrow, like, she was, like, the only Asian in her town in Tennessee, right? Like, Filipino food in that context is so different. What was the context of Filipino food for you, whether it was growing up or during your time at Timpla, and for you, it's like, you know, when you're already in the food truck or even leading up to it, for your respective communities, what was Filipino food perceived as, or what was it like?
Oh, well, we grew up in Northern Virginia, Herndon and Leesburg, which, I mean,
there were maybe, I can count like three or four Filipino restaurants, not even Filipino, just Asian, growing up until maybe like the last 5 years. So we really didn't have any Filipino friends, Asian friends. The only Filipinos or Asian, we had some Asian friends, but the only Filipinos we knew was our family. But we're first generation, so we're still very Filipino. Like
we're not even first generation, we're immigrants.
Yeah, so we are immigrants. We came here when we were five.
Yeah.
And our parents came here in like their 30s. So, and our aunts, our uncles, everybody in our family is immigrant generation. So we were Filipino. So we ate the food and we had the parties and we went to like church and then we were trying to figure out how to be American. I'm using quotes, which was something we didn't understand. We knew more how to be Filipino than American. We were like, "What? Why does this feel so off?"
And sometimes like part of it is like, I remember for me, as a kid, I would conflate American as like puti.
Yeah.
Right? Even though it's not, but I, you know, hence
exactly.
The quotation marks.
Yeah, exactly. Same.
Yeah.
I always was Filipino before American, for sure. But it's only when you're with Filipinos that you are American.
Yeah, I think that's the Filipino-American experience, is that when you're in America, you feel super Filipino. You feel kind of like not that you're not part of the country, but different than like the puti.
Yeah, yeah.
But then when you go to Philippines, they think you are puti.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
they,
yeah.
Like, they don't consider me, like when we go there, our relatives are like, "You're so American, you're not Filipino at all."
Yeah.
But I'm there and I'm like, "I'm finally eating adobo in public."
Yeah.
And you're so Filipino. All the clothes fit me. So it's just like this dynamic of half belonging to both sides, never like 100%, but like a little bit of both all the time.
Yeah. For you, Alexa?
For me, so I had like half Filipino friends, but I'm American Filipino, so my dad came from the Philippines, but I was born here in the States, but I'm definitely American before I'm Filipino. Definitely wasn't until we opened up the business that I even embraced my Filipino side.
Wow.
Yeah.
Did your family have...
So my dad's family is from Alaska, and we grew up in Wisconsin.
Oh, wow.
So, like, it was really just my dad and, like, the cuisine. Yeah, we grew up eating adobo all the time. We grew up eating pancit. Every time I had a birthday party, once I got into middle school, that's all I would want. That's all I requested.
Mm-hmm.
My mom would have a fit because we'd make, you know, like, buffet lines of food for, like, an army of 20,000, and there'd be 40 coming. Yeah, so at my graduation party, she, like, was like, "You're not having a pig roast." I'm like, "Dude, if you want me to have a party, this is what I'm having." And, like, that's that. Like, I've always embraced the food side. All my Caucasian friends were apprehensive, and they eat it. Like, this is amazing. They love it. So the food was always a big part of it, but, like, I never identified with Filipino culture outside of the cuisine.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and, like, we were the odd house. You know, you'd walk in and my dad would have a fish head chilling in the fridge. That's completely normal for me.
Yeah.
But, like, for anyone else, it's freaky. That's weird. Like,
in the ice cream tub. It's in the ice cream tub. It's not even...
Like, casually, he'd go hunting and have a deer just, like, hanging in
that's
the garage.
Amazing.
Yeah.
I love that so much.
Yeah.
So
and, like, in Wisconsin, that's, like, normal kind
yeah.
of. I'm like, "Dad, like, you gotta give a forewarning." Like, you know, me and my friends are, like, coming over and I just bump into this random, like, body swinging in the garage in the dark. Like, it's kind of scary for us. So, I definitely, there wasn't access to Filipino food or culture, and because my mom's white, we definitely weren't accepted on that end. But, like, I also grew up very American, so I never really felt out of place. I grew up with, you know, parents who were like, "Oh, you can't be in the sun too long, dark skin." I always loved being as tan as I could be, yeah. So that experience was much different for me.
But, so when you say, like, you didn't embrace the Filipino culture, because some people would say the food is it. Right? So what exactly do you mean by there was obviously a part that you started embracing.
So the food was the food to me. That's just like what I grew up eating. That was like my norm. And like if you came over to our house, you knew that was our norm and you came there because you wanted to eat it. So it really wasn't like about the Filipino food. Yeah. No, it was just like this is what we ate in my house. Like you eat mac and cheese in your house type of a thing.
And it never felt like you were an odd one out?
I mean, the fish head chilling in the fridge was always like, clearly we're ethnic on some level here. But like, no, I grew up very, very Caucasian. And like, I my friends never like made fun of me or like it was different.
Wow.
I mean, even my dad and his like, you know, Tagalog English blend, like
nobody
ever said anything about that. We grew up in like small town Wisconsin, well, smaller town Wisconsin. Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. No, yeah. It wasn't like that. But by embracing, I think, like, being proud to be Filipino, learning more than just the cuisine, because, like, there is art, there is writing, there's all these, there's so much history and knowledge mm-hmm. and all this different aspects to Filipino culture, but it is so distinctively defined by the food.
Yeah.
So I think that's what I mean, is where, like, I really started to show interest. I wanted to connect with other Filipinos who mm-hmm. were doing dope things, or, like, you know, questioning the norm or changing the story or whatever. But, like, especially our age, our generation, because, like, our voice is so different than our elders.
Mm-hmm.
Like, all of a sudden I wanted to find a crew that, like, mm-hmm. embraced that like I did.
Yeah.
That's what I think, what I mean by that.
Yeah. And I think that's the direction I kind of want to go at, because as I've read the stories and even just, like, conversations for the past few days, hell, even the name of, like, the restaurant now, like, Kaliwa, right,
yeah.
where Paolo works at, it's like, every part of your story somehow has this idea of, like, breaking a norm,
mm-hmm.
right? And even
tradition.
Right.
Yeah.
And a lot of Filipino kids growing up, at least in our generation, there's this, like, unspoken implication that you're supposed to, like, hide your culture. Because we're really good at assimilating, right? So that's,
mm-hmm.
even at the baseline, that's already an expectation that we're, like, kind of breaking, because we're, like, being loud and proud about it.
Mm-hmm.
But could you talk about, on the way here being, like, what you're doing now, whether it is art or the catering or you know, Mainland Street, like, what were just some of the expectations that were either spoken or unspoken that you had to go against?
Well, for me, right now I work at a catering company, but before that I've worked in, like, fine dining restaurants and different events, and I mean, food's not a career, you know? When
quote
I went,
unquote.
Quote unquote, of
I
course.
We'll put the quotes there.
It's yeah,
a struggling artist career.
Yeah.
In high school, I was, like, super passionate about culinary arts, and I really wanted to go to, like, a culinary institute, but that's, I mean, it was expensive for one, but it's not really, you know, the thing that you want to do. Yeah, so I ended up just going to Mason and doing business. I was like, okay, that can still get me to where I want to go, but it's, like, safe enough, safe in quotes. And then, like, midway through my college career, I was like, I just really don't care about this. So I tried going back to culinary school, and then that didn't work out either. And my mom was like, you need to just be an accountant. Just do
it. I won't say it like that. It was more, I'm going to defend my mother.
Go ahead.
It was more along the lines of culinary and private schools don't offer any type of student loan versus public universities that do. And, like, halfway through, she was like, it's just a lot more money than if you were to just finish public university.
But she did want me to go back and just do accounting.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, I mean, my major was business management, and then she was like, I mean, whatever, just go back
sure.
to business.
Yo, I feel you, man. I was an accountant for 2 years.
Yeah.
And I knew from freshman year that I didn't want to do it, so
aww.
I feel you.
Yeah, so I ended up just, like, going back to Mason, and something that I was just, like, really sad about it, because I, like, knew I didn't want to do it, but then my dad told me something that I, like, still think about every day, and he said, you know, just finish, you have 2 years left, like, just finish, it doesn't matter, when you graduate, you can do absolutely whatever you want, and then you'll have the degree,
mm-hmm.
So literally, that's what I did. I just, like, graduated, I ended up doing marketing, still in business, and then, you know, you just, like, work after college, but then having that work experience doing, like, events and being, like, a server working in restaurants. I was, like, a banquet server in college. There was just so much experience that I had accumulated that helped me make the supper club happen. And it was, like, all of that that I put together to, like, make this vision happen. We met Paolo and we met Aniceto and we just made it happen from that. So
yeah, I think the unique thing about Templa is that there's four people and we all have very distinct different fields, versus you have a lot of supper clubs or pop-ups where everyone has a food background or something like that.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I come from a design background. I made the we'll go back to how I got to where I am now. So I majored in art in college. Whether my parents were okay with it or not, I don't know. I don't remember. I think they were okay with it, but I could have just been, like, telling that to myself because I'm, like, super stubborn.
I think they were okay with it.
Yeah. And I was, you know, going through college, making a lot of art. And it was only when I hit my senior year and I was taking more topics-related classes that I started to dive into Filipino art, and I only just did that, like, coincidentally. I was studying, like, land art, and I, like, happened to find trees from Philippines that I really liked, and then, like, started doing more research. And then that kind of led to me doing research about Filipino culture, Filipino art, and that was the first time in all the 4 years that I was in art school that actually felt connected to what I was making.
You did the deforestation piece?
That was me. So from there, I finished out. So I made, like, my senior thesis in college was Campamilia, like, portraits based on each family member. And it was this super, it became super intricate. I wasn't even planning on it, but it was about, it was roughly about how each member of a family, especially in Filipino culture, were very close. And everyone's very, there's things that make each person distinct, but we also are, like, as a unit, come together well, just because family's so important in Filipino culture. So that happened. Graduated from college with an art degree, obviously useless.
useless in quotes.
Useless again in quotes. Weaved my way back into graphic design, got a job in graphic design eventually, but then the art, Filipino art, was still in my mind forever.
Mm-hmm.
And then doing Thimbla allowed me to combine my design experience now with my interest from before, was like with doing the Filipino art. So the logo that we made touches on tribal tattoos and the Baybayin writing, and then like all the pieces that we did, all the marketing pieces, like I designed for Zimbla. So it allowed me to do that thing that I was interested in back then and combine it and make it into like this profitable endeavor. But the backstory of Thimbla is that we all come from a different background, me being design, Christina being front of house, kind of like front of house managerial, I guess, restaurant managerial experience, and then the two boys being chefs. So it was a well-oiled machine of checks and balances. You know, you have some people that are better at one thing, some people that are better than the other, and we all kept each other in check about, you need to tell me what to do for this, and like, you know, timelines and stuff like that. So that's why I think we were able to create something a little bit different than what other people had done before. And then when we were presenting our dishes, we would go into pretty intricate stories. Like if we were to do a sinigang, if we served it to people, we would talk about how we ate it growing up and how we transformed it into a new dish, or like, you know, made a little bit more modern or upscale, which is what we talk about in our book. So I think that was interesting. I don't know where we started anymore.
No, that's perfectly fine. Tangents are welcome. For people who aren't familiar with the language, by the way, Thimbla means to mix.
Oh, yes.
Or mixture, depending which dialect you use, because for us, Thimbla is like, could also be mixture. Before I pass the question to you, Alexa, because I think your answer, in contrast to Christina's, is going to be a very jarring opposite, whereas you were like, just finished a degree.
Yeah.
Obviously quit weeks away. So before we get into that, because I think
poor father, I know. Before we get into that, hard, yeah.
It'll be a great counterpoint, but I was wondering, I read this really good quote from, I think she's an immigrant artist, and she said, you know, a big difference is that our parents were, especially immigrant families or the immigrant generation, was tasked with survival.
Mm-hmm.
And we have the privilege of self-actualization,
exactly.
Right? Which is a huge privilege. And sometimes it is the cause of why these expectations don't get met.
Yeah.
But during this whole time, when you were pursuing design, when you were pursuing culinary arts, but then had to go back into like business, was the main pushback from the parents, one, their mindset was, we just got to survive in this foreign place? Or was it simply economic? Meaning, I'm just looking at economics. Like, if management didn't make money, I would have told you not to go into it.
Mm-hmm.
I would have told you to go to nursing, maybe. What was behind the expectation, so to speak?
It's a little bit of both. Like, our parents never really forced us to do one thing.
Mm-hmm.
Where we have, like, there's some people we know where, like, you have to be a nurse, you have to, like, be an accountant. Our parents kind of gave us the leisure to pick a career. Our brother ended up doing finance.
Wait, Francis is finance?
He's a finance major.
What the hell is he doing at Sprinklr?
He didn't like finance anyway. He probably likes it.
He was a finance major. He's really into all that stock stuff. So
yeah.
So we talked to him all the time about it, and he said he always felt like his role as the oldest sibling was to be secure. And we're like, you know, we're sisters. We're like the younger sisters, so we never felt that.
Yeah.
And our parents never pressured us. The only thing they did was like, you know, education is really important, so go get your education. But in terms of like specifically molding us towards a career, that wasn't their thing. Mm-hmm. They kind of like trusted that we would figure it out.
Yeah.
So, which is like very much not how Filipinos are.
I think with our brother, he had... I don't think they ever said to him, you need to be secure. I think he kind of just felt it internally as the oldest.
As, like, an older brother,
but
you know?
But I think that because
like
he took on that role so well, we almost, like, took on zero responsibility
yeah.
role. And they were always also saying, because we paid for our own college, I guess. We did student loans, not we paid for it. Still paying for it.
I'm in that club. I have a high level
classes.
At that club. Yep.
Mm-hmm. But their caveat was, you are paying for your own, so we're not going to tell you what to do, because if we force you to go in a path that you don't like and you paid for it, you're going to blame us for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
Because my mom is one of eight, and she's number five out of eight. So she's had older siblings who like force their children to do whatever, and those children were unhappy and blamed their parents and, you know, this and that. And by the time she was, like, of the age to have children, she felt like it was more important to stress education and finishing school versus what you actually do.
Do finish,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah, the concept of actually finishing and doing what you want to do so you can be successful versus me forcing you to do something and you're going to be unhappy and it's not going to lead anywhere anyway.
Got you. Okay, so... To Alexis then, because I know your story. After I heard you just say yours, I was like, God, this is going to be such a different ending. Could you recount your experience with the path that you were on? And whether that was an expectation. And two, when you decided to then pursue meet on the street, what were the expectations that then arose out of that?
Okay, so I'm the oldest by 5 and 7 years, so I have two younger brothers, so kind of opposite of what you guys had. My parents, I was very smart in math, because, you know, I'm Asian.
I mean, I'll just call it out. There were no quotation marks.
Yeah, no. I've been in advanced math since third grade. Kids would pay me in college to do their homework, and I would get paid $40 for, like, 20 minutes of work. I mean, it was good. I had a good game.
I charged $5.
Oh, homeboy. You're a low baller.
I got like $20 for doing like a whole semester's worth of stuff.
A whole semester.
Okay, so you, that's the lowest.
It was
ever
so
heard.
Easy.
Doesn't matter. That's not my fault you're not smart at math. That's your own issue.
It literally took me like 20 minutes, and this guy had been building up these sheets for the whole semester.
Hey, you know, money, easy money is easy money though, right? We'll take it however we can get it. So I wanted to do hair and makeup. I wanted to do interior design, and my parents said, absolutely not. Mm-hmm. A, you're too smart. I'm going to put that in quotations because that is such crap. You can do whatever you want to do as long as you're willing to put in the work. So I don't agree with that statement. One. Two, I was told that I could be an engineer, a lawyer, a doctor, you know, one of those.
One of the smart.
Oh, God. Yeah.
God,
one of those.
I hate, there's no way for me to show on this podcast when we're doing quotation marks. We literally have to say.
You should have some kind of like, I don't know, a button.
Yeah. So I definitely had expectation. They'll sit there and say otherwise, but that is not how I was raised in my household. I was raised that I was going to go to college. I was going to get a degree. I was going to get a degree that would be able to sustain the lifestyle that I was used to having. And I grew up in a very comfortable family. My parents provided a lot. My dad is an engineer, an electrical engineer. And then my mom is a nurse. So I went to school for mechanical engineering, right?
That's a good...
Yeah, it is. It's a great career. Yeah, I dropped out 22 weeks away from graduating my senior year. And I didn't tell my dad. I just did it. So my parents raised me to be a strong-willed individual. They raised me to stand on my own 2 feet, to voice my opinion, and to not... Yeah, to not follow what I wanted to do. So I actually... took what they rose me or they raised me to be, and then I did it against them. So that was very interesting, which is what my story is about, is telling my dad I don't want to be an engineer. I want to do the flip side and actually go into the food industry because I like making people happy with food. That's
Did you have any experience?
I had worked at a steakhouse. I did fine dining for 5 years. I loved it. It was
cooking
fun.
Or serving?
No, literally serving.
Serving.
No,
okay.
No. And so I told them I was dropping out. I don't remember it being that bad of a shock as I expected it. I built it up in my head to be something different, but I had already been planning the food truck. So then I was like, oh, there's no Filipino food in Milwaukee. What if we open up a food truck? What would it cost? I had all this research done, and I bought an LLC, not Meat on the Street, a different name at the time, and I presented it to my dad, and he took me seriously.
I'm curious. What was the name?
We were always going to call it... Okay, so since third grade, since I've been in third grade, and I have the same group of friends since, like, first grade. Like, my girls, we've been together through it all. So, like, we used to joke that my dad would open up a restaurant called Ray's Place, because he was one of the best cooks ever. Like, yeah, we call it Ray's Place, right? Yeah, well, no, because Ray's an electrical engineer. He didn't drop out of school and go for food,
yeah.
So he stuck doing engineer stuff, so that's why we changed the name. But
yeah,
they were okay with it. They weren't really sure, and I was such a wild child growing up. I mean, I was defiant and lost and confused at 18, like I feel like most 18-year-olds
mm-hmm.
are. So they were very supportive, and then it just... You guys, it just took off in a direction we never really imagined it to take off. And all of a sudden, it was like all these crazy opportunities left and right. And it was just like, wow. And then they were like, oh my gosh, our kids are kind of cool for this. And then it kind of validated us, right?
Yeah.
And now, you know, when we first started, everyone's like looking at me like, you don't even know how to cook that well. How the hell are you going to run a food truck? And I'm like, don't worry about it. You got to think outside the box, people.
That's
right?
When you outsource the labor to your younger brother, right? It's...
When I dragged my darling brother along with me, he wasn't doing anything with his life at the time. He's fine. Yeah, I helped him out for the better.
Underutilized
know,
resource.
Right? He's going to be listening to this. He's going to be like, Lexi, you're such a jerk. But
my brother's going to say a thing about bringing
Yeah, exactly, right? sibling love, that's what we call it. We're siblings before we're business partners. So.
Yeah.
There's... So we talked about expectations around immigrant families, right? So that's one of how you should behave. But in terms of career choices, there's also like which generation you're coming in as,
mm-hmm.
like whether you're first sibling, second sibling. But I think the one thing that I was also really excited for this episode, and I think for tomorrow's when I recorded the other ones, I've noticed that even looking at who mentored me to get to where I am today and who is even in the launch for tomorrow are large and are all women, right? So that's another thing because
about
from
time.
part of me was thinking, okay, maybe it's just Filipino American women because they raise them like, you know, they have no morals, you know what I mean? Like there's this like, oh, you makano, they're different, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But if
oh, yeah.
but if I look at it, for example, Tita Amy Bezos, this Purple Yam, the most badass, she's like way louder than Tito Romy, right?
Yeah.
And that's all of my mentors across generations, across backgrounds. It's almost all of them are women. But that's so jarring for me because I grew up on the opposite end where I was shown women from even my own family who were like beaten down.
Mm-hmm.
Like they had a fire and all the men would just beat it out of them and they would be
this
like...
This was your role and you don't wait
and
outside
they've accepted it, right?
Mm-hmm.
They've, for lack of a better phrase, surrendered.
Yeah.
For you, was there any of that happening during your experiences either... actually, I guess more so when you were already doing Timplan when you're doing Meat on the Street. Because that's even further out of an expectation buster, right?
I mean, no. My parents raised me to be strong. My mom's extremely strong-willed. I mean, she's Italian-German. She doesn't take shit from anyone.
Yeah.
My mom is the same. She's like bad.
Yeah.
She's like yells at my dad.
Yeah.
My mom,
she's,
mom's like the outgoing one.
Yeah.
Our mom's the shy one.
Yeah.
So.
I mean, yeah.
That's,
my parents...
We think that's where we got it from.
My parents
yeah.
are equals, but they, like... It doesn't matter that you're female. Like, you can still do whatever you
mm-hmm.
want to do. I definitely was raised in a house that you can do whatever you choose to do. You just have to believe in yourself, you know?
Yeah. And I'm wondering if it's also just, like, you know, in America, just in... People are women and men
mm-hmm.
are a lot more equal.
Mm-hmm.
I'd be curious what
in the Philippines. Yeah, I think
yeah,
it's
the
opposite.
Yeah, in the Philippines
I agree.
Or even like other. I haven't looked too much into the book yet, but other contributors from other countries are a lot of them women also, or are they mostly men?
Well, that's what I was mentioning. Is like for example, my mentors who didn't grow up in the States,
mm-hmm.
or at least like they were also subjected to the immigrant experience. The women were the ones driving all of it,
yeah.
right? And even when I look at my cousins now, part of it is generational. Like, yeah, they're still seen as like, oh, the women should stay home. But the ones who I've seen consistently have the strongest willpower where like, unfortunately, just because of society back in the Philippines, that willpower gets sapped over time.
Yeah.
But the ones who still usually have put up the most fight are the, like, my cousins who are female. They're the most entrepreneurial, most, you know. And I'm wondering, like, whether that experience has affected what your ventures have looked like today. You know what I mean? Like, I wonder if you didn't have those expectations, what would Diplo have looked like? But since you didn't have those kind of pushback, I got, you know, I guess that's a good question.
I would say, for me, someone who, like, you know, thought it would, like, wanted to do culinary arts, and, you know, the dream is to own a restaurant, and the dream would be to own a Filipino restaurant.
You can have
mine. Really,
I'm selling it this week. Yeah, I can
I'm
call man.
$5. I still want to do it.
Yeah, $5.
Nicole Ponseca was, like, when I went to Maharlika for the first time, when it opened, I think it was in 2012.
Oh, yeah.
I went there, and I was like, wow, this is exactly what I had wanted to do, and she was doing it.
Yeah.
So maybe that helped me.
Yeah, I think definitely, like, for both of us, Nicole is
our idol.
But that's another one, right? You should hear her talk about her mom.
Uh-huh.
And she's like, her mom or her Lola are like badasses.
Like, women have always been, like, Tiger Mom, right? The whole Tiger Mom Asian thing. Women have always been hardcore. And even a lot of overseas Filipino workers, a lot of them are the women. And the men, not always, but, like,
the women had to, like, provide for the family.
But sometimes, sometimes women have the strength to do the sacrifice that needs to be done, just because, like, their mothers and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Their grandparents. And we see that a lot in Filipino cultures, and maybe, like, in a previous generation, the strength was to go work overseas to provide for your family.
Yeah.
And now that we have more comfort in our lives, like, you know, our mom, we saw her sacrifice her whole family. She moved to America when me and my sister were only a couple of months old. Our brother was two, and she left the three of us and our dad in Philippines. Our dad later followed, but, you know, just having that idea that my mom did this insane sacrifice for us, I can work a little harder, you know? And I think that Filipinos in general see this level of sacrifice that is unimaginable.
Mm.
That we're like, I can start a food truck. I can do this. It's not that bad compared to what.
Because you have a reference point that for other people are like, they don't have that reference point.
Exactly. That's how, like, I think that's where, like, whenever I think about how hard my life is, I'm like, I'm not leaving my children in another country where there's no, like,
I have a roof over my head,
like,
water pressure.
There's nothing to complain about.
Yeah.
So that's where, like, I think that's kind of where our push comes from.
You're listening to Hidden Apron Radio, produced by myself, Paolo Espanola, and Ricky Ho. Just two ordinary guys trying to break bread and break boundaries. Thoughts, musings, ever just wanted to rant at us? Do let us know at hiddenapron@gmail.com or at hidden_apron on both Twitter and Instagram. Back to the show.
I think having more women, as in every industry, having more women higher up that can vouch for other women and protect and speak for those that are below them is a good place to start.
I think it's good that you pointed out the fact that the culinary industry, at least how we see it today, is actually really young.
Mm-hmm.
Cooking is old,
mm-hmm.
but the system,
the arts, culinary arts,
as we see it today,
mm-hmm.
is actually really
especially
young. Because
in America.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
and it's the same reason why even, like, young, like, I work in tech, we have the same problem,
exactly.
Right? There's not enough women
up
at top.
I was like the only female in some classes.
Wow. Like, it's why there's bro tech culture, right? And
yeah.
and one of the ways to solve it is hire more senior women, because that would go away. So I like the fact that you've pointed it out. And the second thing being that I think people sometimes conflate toughness, and they're mixing it up with inappropriate. So let me, like, back up, right? Like, if a head chef was harassing you for your work, that's one thing.
Yeah.
But if they're harassing you for, like, completely
non-unprofessional
stuff,
mm-hmm.
that's completely separate, and you can't, like, conflate the two.
Yeah.
Which I think is very easy, I think, and why people would argue the opposite of like, oh, we get harassed too. Like, how's that any different from you? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean,
does somebody constantly pursue you though, like wanting to go out with them and they don't leave you? And then you say no, and then all of a sudden you become a bitch and like you ask them for something and then there's an attitude and you don't get your food.
I mean, you're literally comparing like getting yelled at because you like cooked the steak too much to like getting hit on by like four people that you work with.
Yeah.
It's not the
same. You know, on the opposite side, and part of the problem too, at least in our culture, is this is the more toxic part of, I think, the Filipino machismo that we get taught, is if we as guys don't do that, oh, bakla ka or bading kayo.
Yeah.
It's like if we don't hit on you, we're not seen as respectful. We're seen as like, oh, dude, there's something wrong with you.
Yeah. Which is so red. That's another, yeah.
That's
there's a lot of them where I'm just like, mean? Why? So why was this even created?
Yeah. But would you say, looking around now, just given the fact that the people in the launch tomorrow are all women, do you think that the industry is going in the right direction? Or if it is, I'm sure you're going to say like, well, it's not quite there yet. What else is needed besides more women in senior roles?
I think men need to vouch for women completely. Mm. That's actually the first place. That's before women being in the senior roles. If men that are already those head positions, if they're already senior, like senior level head chefs, if they get a complaint from a female server chef and said, this person's hitting on me, they need to be like, I trust you, let's deal with the issue. I think that's the
totally
first
agree.
Line of defense.
Gotcha.
I don't beyond that, I don't know. It's the restaurant industry is hard. And
I know,
people
so
say, because
like
it's blurred lines, because we have fun together when we're on the job,
it's
right?
It's so different than an office job where you're like, oh my God, like serious
well,
all the time.
Like,
that's not
how
I am.
Half the time we're on Facebook or something.
But
not me, but I've seen a lot of
you don't have inappropriate conversations with your head cook and your, not like,
yeah,
that makes
yeah,
you
yeah,
uncomfortable,
yeah.
But you, if you've worked in the kitchen, you know any topic is available to talk about at any
yeah.
point in time. I mean,
and it's mostly inappropriate.
Yeah, because
yeah.
that's just who we are. Which
yeah,
those are my people. I like
yeah,
them
yeah.
for that reason. But that's, I think, where it gets hard, because then
exactly,
it's like,
yeah.
how can you sit there and have an open discussion about this, but then when somebody kind of like insinuates like something along that lines with you one-on-one, why is that now uncomfortable? I don't
yeah.
know how that changes. I'm just
yeah.
playing devil's advocate, but a big part is males
I mean,
having to lead the way beyond. I can scream all I want, but you're not going to hear me.
Something that
know?
I've
yeah.
definitely had experience with were female coworkers complaining about issues with other coworkers to their male managers, and those guys literally not doing anything about it or acting like it wasn't a big deal.
It's
so
always,
I would definitely say
deal,
that
yeah.
was
mm-hmm.
number
yeah.
one.
Mm.
You're just bitching. That's what I get told.
It's
then.
Just
you're
yeah,
just
and it's just kind of like, oh yeah, that's not let, or this person acts this way, or he's actually like really important in the restaurant, so we can't do anything about it. And it's just like, yeah, that's not okay.
Yeah, but I also wanna point out though that it's more insidious than just industry, because it's literally in the culture too,
mm-hmm.
right? Like I was at church
yeah,
in Philippines, like I think a year and a half ago, 2 years ago. And the priest, this was a Christmas sermon. So imagine like it's all families in there.
Yeah.
And the priest was literally saying how the women's liberation movement, they called it women's lib,
mm-hmm.
was a horrible thing.
Wow.
And all the women were going to run loose. And because the Chinese character for danger is women outside of the house, this is proof that we should keep them all.
This is a Philippine
man made
church.
That character up.
No, I researched his character and there's no basis for his argument.
Oh, so it's not
none
even
at all. No,
wow.
not even. I looked at
so
the basis of
asshole.
I looked at the character and I was like, dude, there's nothing about this character. And
yeah.
I read blog after blog. I'm like, I couldn't find anything.
Yeah.
But he gave us an opportunity to question, right? Like, because it was kind of like an open forum. And so I raised my hand. I was like, okay, well, by your argument, if the woman's role is really to be... Because everyone was nodding.
You did this at the church?
At the church. He's actually a very liberal
great.
Priest.
Yeah.
It's great.
God.
But
liberal,
yeah. liberal enough to let us, like,
yeah.
talk, right? But it was just strange because I would see my own, like, kin... And not like direct family, but like people from that town, women themselves were nodding like, yes,
mm-hmm.
we should be. And I'm like, wow, this is strange. And I was like, maybe I'm just being American. Let me
yeah.
take a break. We raised my hand and I was like, well, by your logic, we shouldn't send our daughters to school, right? Because I knew that was going to touch off some people, like, no, you got to finish college.
Yeah.
I was like, yeah, don't send your daughter. She should drop out now, because by your logic, that's... And he backed up. He's like, well, we should, but only to a certain extent. Like, you know, just for fun, maybe. And I was like, all right, we're not going to get anywhere.
I'm glad I wasn't at that church.
Because someone was just...
No,
to your point, is the whole respect thing. They're like, oh, that's the priest, don't, you know.
And that drives me nuts, though. Like, I see both sides of it. I can't say it.
That's what I mean. It's like, a lot of it is culture, too. Yeah. And like, how do you change a culture that's been created over decades?
It's culture on both sides. Like, we're taught respect, and no matter what, we're going to give it.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I think that we could be bitchier and we could maybe have more of an attitude when we say things.
But then they spin
that's
that on you.
I am,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And it's like, can I just be who I am without becoming this huge thing against me?
We try. Whenever we have others that come in and they want to just challenge us in a very difficult way, is how I'll choose to politically say that. Well, I just try and explain it from my side of the, you know, where they're like, you know, your food's not Filipino enough. It's too expensive. We sell a single portion of adobo for $7, by the way. Seven freaking dollars. Yes, and it's too expensive. And I'm like,
for guys right here.
Oh, me and Paul had a talk. I was like, dude, I
should have seen him at the pass last right this tonight. Yeah. Good thing it wasn't busy, because he was going off.
Yeah. We were talking, he's like, how do you deal with it? And I'm like, I'm like, look, I get what you're saying, and you're entitled to your opinion, but like, this is much different. I'm not just slinging food here. Like, this is livelihood. This is a check. This is bills. Like, this is a business that is trying to operate and generate money. And beyond the financial part of it is that, like, what's going to happen to our culture when you pass away? Because you're, like, 30, 40 years old.
Because
than me.
No one can make the adobo the way you can.
Yes. Okay? Yes. And I'm like, well, what's going to happen to our culture when you pass away if you refuse to support the trend it's heading in now? Because it's us. This is the future of our culture is here. It's... And I'm so thankful that, like, this generation, we all feel the same, where we're like, we need to break molds here. Like, this is outdated. Definitely. And I'm like, if you don't want to support that, then the good stuff you have to offer that we don't know, we'll never get to, because you create such a conflict. You create such differences. Mm-hmm. So, like, that is what I bring up. And I've had a couple come back and be like, you were right. You know, thank you.
That's appreciated.
I mean, only three of 20. Hey, it's a step in the right direction, my lad. I mean, they were not happy with, and then I was being disrespectful. You know, I had calls, you were disrespectful. Oh, and I'm like, I wasn't, though. I did not raise my voice. You know, I did not try and cop an attitude, even though I wanted to bitch them out. Like, I really tried to just... I'm allowed to explain my side.
Yeah.
Whether you're my elder or whether you're younger than me, like, you can explain your side.
Yeah,
I can
but you know, this
my
is
side.
this is a generation that views any talking back as like, uy, sumasagot ka, you know
what
I mean?
Oh, yeah. Oh, my gosh.
You know?
Yeah. And it's just like,
oh, definitely.
You know,
it's like, oh, let me tell you the rudest thing I feel about you, but you can't say anything.
Yeah, but you just have to say, oh, thank you.
Yeah.
That's pretty much it.
I'm glad you brought this up, because I wanted to get to this last topic of the whole expectation around Filipino food is like the last pillar of expectation I want to like discuss. How do you deal with how? Because I'm sure Timpla had it.
Yeah,
I'm sure you had the feedback.
Yeah.
How did you deal with it?
Our number one feedback was, "Where's the rice?" And this is people that are already expecting a different experience. Like, the way that Timpla works, you're coming into a quote-unquote secret spot in D.C. It's like, it's trendy. Like, you're going into a secret spot in D.C. You don't know where it is. It's like, there's 10 strangers. You're, like, in a space that is, like, coursed out. We had, like, 4 or 5 courses coursed out. Very fancy, again, in quotes. So they already had this expectation of, like, more fine dining setting, more modern. But they were still, like, I want rice. Right. I mean, some people are a little bit more like harsh than others. Some people are like, haha, where's the rice? But then other people are like,
they were offended.
Rice?
They were like offended. Yeah. You didn't have rice.
We kind of made it kind of our mission statement.
Keep going, by the way.
Use rice.
I'm listening.
Well,
I'm just going to grab the
thank
other.
You.
Yeah.
Thank you for breaking the mold.
Yeah,
like, that's what it was again, where it's like, thanks for challenging the norm. Yeah.
I literally went to Deli Wa on Sunday and I was like, I really need rice.
But then you always want the rice. And I think that's valid. Because
it's, Umai or whatever.
Yeah. But I think for us, luckily, because it was such like a different setting of food, we had more of an open,
more willingness
audience.
Yeah.
So we didn't have as much of the direct criticism as I'm sure you did, or as like what Kaliwa is getting. I'm sure Bad Saint got it. I'm sure like Maharlika, everybody, you know, Proplam, everyone's getting it. Everyone in San Francisco, blah, blah, everybody is getting it. We were just slightly
You're right. Pop-ups get it a little bit less because it's slightly a paying audience. Yeah.
And then, like, the people that did come in, the Filipinos that did come were more, like, the forward-thinking Filipinos. So
because they were,
like,
excited. Yeah.
They were like, I'm so glad to see Filipino food industry.
Yeah, and it was not, like, a cheap price, so we didn't just get anybody.
You eliminated those people.
We got people who wanted culinary experience, so we got pretty lucky with that.
If we were to speak for Kaliwa, because Paolo and JR work there, or Paolo and Aniceto work there now, they get the worst of the worst. I mean, like, their Yelp reviews, their Google reviews were, like, three and a half stars
for
a long time, because all of the, you know, like, it's, there's not a lot of Filipino restaurants, and the one that is here is Bad Saint, which is, like, hard to get into, small seats, that kind of stuff, so a lot of that... again, for them, they kind of had that blanket against maybe people that would be more critical because they're not going to wait in line for 3 hours. Kaliwa is the first kind of public, quote-unquote, restaurant, Filipino upscale restaurant that you could get it for modern, and it's easy enough to get into.
And there'd be more criticism now because it's a more, like, exposed...
Exactly.
Right, yeah.
And also, the chef, like, the chef owner is Irish. The wife's Filipino. But the chef is Irish, so, you know, there's these people coming in with these expectations, like,
Why is this white guy making this
food, and it's expensive, I'm paying so much money, this and that. So
and I think the biggest thing, Bad Saint and Kaliwa do this, they do small plates. They do, like, tapas style, they don't do, like,
family style,
they don't do entree, so they're doing, like, you know, they're putting a lot of work into these plates, and you're paying, like, I don't know, $15 to $30 for one plate, and Bad Saint is just so small that not a lot of the Filipinos are, traditional Filipinos, in quotes, are going there, but Kaliwa is so big that they are going there, and this is the first time that they're experiencing Filipino food as, like, small plates, quote-unquote expensive, and it's just, like, what? I can make this for $2 at my house. And they just don't get, you know, it's like the vendors they use are like local farms. They get everything like local. The way they cook the products are very culinary style. It's not just like...
Yeah, there's technique involved.
In a house kitchen, yeah. And nobody understands what that food value is in.
The education. So many customers that come are like, why don't you just do this? You know, whatever. I was telling him, I'm like, to make garlic rice is a freaking process. It's garlic rice. It shouldn't be, but it is.
Yeah.
You know, you got to do this. You got to do that. You got to do that. You got to store it. Yeah.
First of all, you got to cut like 10,000 pieces of garlic.
Oh my God.
You're paying someone that. You're paying someone like a living wage to cut 10,000 pieces of garlic. It's not going to be the
same. We had the same argument. He served us ube ice cream.
And I was like, this is amazing.
I was like, this is great. Like, where do you get your ube? Because I was expecting, oh, we'd probably get like a whole bag of pulp or desiccated pulp. He's like, no, we get them from this farm and we have to grade. I'm like, holy shit, dude. Like, that's a selling point. Like, you should be charging more. He's like, dude, no one gives a shit.
That's what I said. I was like, care. We think it's cool. All these people on this farm, they don't care. They think it's expensive.
They make their own, like, mang damas, like pork liver sauce from scratch. They do fried garlic, like the thin sliced fried garlic. They make that. You could buy that from the store, but they make it. So obviously they're going to...
Even the chicharron, I was like, make that?
I mean, even this, like, homemade mang damas that they make, right? They make this homemade liver sauce. They had to figure out how to make the recipe because the only thing everyone ever knows is mang damas, and that is, like, a monopoly. There's literally no one else that makes mang damas in all the Philippines.
It's just this one guy named Tomas. Yeah,
right? No, oh my God, right? We need to go find this guy. I'm a millionaire on the island.
Yeah, so Mang Tomas is just like an amazing human being, which, mad respect for Mang Tomas. But you go to Kaliwa and they make homemade, whatever we want to call it, Mang Tomas, pork liver sauce, and they're like, oh, this isn't
because it's not Mang Tomas.
Because it's not that specific taste that you've had your whole life.
You know,
but
like,
it's different.
Part of the way that I addressed it before, and this was kind of in line with what, I don't know if you guys know Yana, who did the 50-state tour, what we used to do was fact-based. Because we thought, this is, you know, if you think about, like, scientists who try to, like, prove climate change, they thought that if you just had the right facts, you'd be fine. Because, like, we would serve something, and we would do our research. Yana did her research. So Yana, on a dinner, she served a dish from Mindanao, so it looked very, like, curry. Mm-hmm. And someone, you know this type of Filipino, the type who like has the Filipino flag snap back, like like proud Pinoy tattoo, whatever. He's like, man, this ain't Pinoy. And she's like, well, actually, this is a cuisine from Mindanao. I don't know if you're familiar with it, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. And she was factually correct.
Yeah.
Didn't get anywhere, right? And even me, like, I would explain, like, yo, by the way, did you know, like, you're so, because I see some Filipinos who would talk about, like, the Indians, right? I'm like, the entire area of Visayas came from Srivijaya.
Yeah.
Like, we came from that culture.
Exactly.
It's factually correct.
It's in our language, too. There's yes. so much Indian, Hindu
but it,
language.
It, for some reason, it wouldn't work, for some reason. And I feel like it's never really about the facts, and what I've almost resorted to now is to almost convince people that they were cheated out of their heritage. So, like, let's take, for example, the fact that you put all this technique into food, mm-hmm. and then they will respond with, oh, but I could make this $2 at home using this ingredient. I'm like, well, you might, but guess what? The only reason you're doing that is because someone sold you on this. Before you came to America, like, our ancestors would go through the laborious process just like this.
Exactly.
Like, even my aunts right now, when they want to peel a radish, I almost tell them, like, why don't you just get a mandolin and just do that? And they are using a tiny knife, and they're like, no, this is how you're supposed to do it. They're or, so like, when they make coconut milk.
Filipinos are so indigenous when it comes to their cooking.
Yeah.
I mean, it's insane. You can't run a business with these practices. Yeah.
But it's laborious, right?
Yeah,
so one of our aunts, like, the cassava cake, we obviously use, like, frozen cassava cake.
As do I.
But we have one aunt that, like, buys fresh cassava, cooks it, and then has, like, this special device that I don't even know. She, like, I asked her about it, and she, like, used a super Tagalog word that I can't even say and don't remember. Oh, and then she, like, duk-duks the, like,
cassava
cake.
She, like, strains it or something. Yeah.
Shaves it, and whenever she makes like achara, which is like the papaya salad, she like hand shaves it too. It's just like there's a lot easier ways to do this,
and that
don't want
on
to
a business perspective, that's labor, that's money.
But that's what I mean is once
no
you tell
gets,
people, once you tell
yeah,
people, like
yeah. again, you're like, hey,
you were
living wage to duk duk.
Yeah, it should be a line item on the accounting. Duk duk, $12. You're like, what's this line item? Like, you want to see?
Exactly. You know what? You can come back and test it. Like, you can do it yourself.
$5.
Let me show you. Yeah.
But that's what I mean is people weren't taught to value that because they thought that is inherent in the cuisine. And it wasn't until here with the Industrial Revolution where we're literally people came to the Philippines and taught us that our eating practices were unsanitary. Therefore, we should use canned goods. The canned goods, that's how it came to be. They were supposed to be more sanitary.
Huh.
And I don't know, like for some reason, I've had more success telling diners, your heritage was robbed from you. And this is why you, I mean, not in those words.
No, but it's just,
not in those words,
but
it's
like, I don't doubt that it works. It's just a different way of thinking and it's smart, actually.
Yeah. It's like pulling a judo move where you go like, you think like this, but only because someone incepted you on it.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh shit, I've been lied to. And then suddenly they're coming, you know what I mean? And I don't know, maybe like that's another way to do it just because the fact-based, I don't know if the fact-based will never work for you guys.
They walk in and look at the menu and they'll go, you guys don't have enough Filipino menu items. You're not Filipino.
How would you want a double?
And I'm like, everything up there is traditional. Like, we don't mind.
Yeah.
Sorry, our udon rolls, I put chocolate chips in them because that's how I like to eat them instead of jackfruit because jackfruit's expensive and I sell them for $1.
Yeah.
My bad. That is the one thing that we don't do.
You sell the run for $1?
That's pretty good.
We dirt cheap prices. Still hear shit about it, too. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think we need to, like,
it's educating.
With our movement, since we're all on the same page anyway, like, we need to find a new word that's, like, not traditional and not authentic. Because when you use those two words, it almost gives them permission, quote-unquote, again, permission to, like, say shit. But if you say, like, modern or something else, that just, like, makes them, it, like, stops them from saying shit.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we called ourselves modern, so even if we made, you know, Atol Dereta the exact same recipe, but then we just, like, made it look a little prettier on a plate and we called it modern, then people had
Still not get pushback from that? Because they'll be like, oh, modern. Well, it's just
like
basically more expensive food. It's not really Filipino. Don't you still get pushback?
I mean,
from
we
that?
Were just like really lucky with our audience, honestly.
I think if
we
had opened it to a
bigger
audience, we probably would have gotten pushback.
They had an ideal target audience.
Yeah.
Price range. That's
it,
what it comes down
that's
to.
That's where my marketing background
price
came
in. Yes, that was enough smart.
Thanks, Colin.
And that is smart.
This is the part where you're like, your parents would talk about, I told you. Before I go into this last section that is pretty much the rapid fire that is on every episode. Was there something that I didn't ask? That you felt I didn't ask?
I just want to give a shout out to Jackie because she is the best human in the world. First of all, for making this book happen and for putting us all together.
I can't. I know she knows this, but she like doesn't get to feel it.
I don't think it's fair.
And this is why you guys missed out on San Fran, because we felt the same thing. Like, we all walked in kind of whatever, but after that experience, I was like, these are my homies. Yeah. Like, it was so much deeper. It was, and it, I was like, I found a crew of Filipinos that I'm like, yes, we are together in this, and I'm proud to be with these people. Like, it, I don't get that in Milwaukee that much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And even like the greater Filipino food movement with like Joanne Boston kind of started that. That's how.
Have you met her?
I met her in San Francisco last year. Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. And
we like each other's Facebooks a lot.
Social media love, man.
I love her. But just, I'm so glad that someone realized that a lot of Filipinos are doing similar things and decided to put us together.
Definitely.
Because I don't think I would have ever found you guys if it wasn't for that greater group. So I'm just glad that there's people out there that's
hubs,
helping us all do what we want to do.
Yeah, and it's just so hard. You know, you grew up in Milwaukee. We're from, like, Virginia.
When did I ever find you guys?
Yeah.
Like, no offense, but, like, social media helps, but, like...
Social media is, like,
it gives,
just to know that there's people that knows
yeah.
exactly how you think, mm-hmm. especially with your Filipino culture mm-hmm. and your food. It's
it makes me, like,
yeah,
feel
so
relieved I'm not the only
Jackie.
One who,
exactly.
like, is going through this.
Exactly.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
To deal with
yeah.
the
well,
criticism.
Like, I mean, the book is so special. Like,
yeah.
regardless of what happens to the book itself, like, every author in there I know, especially ones that when we get together, like, we get to bond on a different level.
Well, that's why Rodelio is, like, volume two.
No, and seriously.
like
we should have an annual get-together. Yeah.
Or not a conference.
No,
like,
something.
Like a chill hangout.
But I think that's why, like, it's so different because... I actually knew of you a while back already because
mm-hmm.
JR had contacted me.
Oh, okay.
But even at that point, I feel like there just needed to be someone with just enough craziness to overcome the doubt.
Yeah.
Because I doubted it. I mean, I remember even like getting published on Thrillist. I remember one of you responded because I wrote a piece and I didn't like
it. I remember you sounded like unsure.
I was
about
so
it.
Unsure
like,
about
get it,
it.
Man, do your thing.
Because it went out, and I'm like, dude, I'm not happy with the end result.
Yeah.
I'm just not happy. And she's like, well, better you wrote it than some, like, guy. Like, come on now. I was like, oh, yeah, that's right.
It was an article that you did. It was a while ago. But...
Yeah, it was a while back. But it's the same thing where, like, I'm pretty sure each of us had our own doubts, and Jackie was just the one person. Because she actually emailed me separately and said she had her own doubts
mm-hmm.
about the launch itself. But her level of craziness just exceeded that just a little
for
bit.
Sure.
Dude, I was like, this launch is going to be what I'm not like a feelings person.
Mm-hmm.
I don't, like when you're like up there crying, I'm like, oh, you sweet.
But
lady.
I'm not.
But I'm not like I don't do that.
I have a lot of feelings.
Yeah.
So.
I'm glad because
like, I'm a feels person,
but
I try not to put that on public. I'm supposed to be like the Chinoy, right? The Chinoys are like hella stoic.
Yeah. And that's how I really truly feel. Like, that's, but like after I came home from the SF and I was like almost crying. My car, so I was like, oh my god, this was so touching and meaningful and deep, and like it's just words on a page, but it's
mm-hmm.
so much more than that.
So much more.
Yeah, and it's it just like I said, I just feel lucky. I want to shout out to all the Filipinos that do support us though.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we kind of bashed on our culture.
Yeah.
I know we all feel the same way, but like no, to the ones that have been there from day one, to the ones that challenged
definitely.
The others even, like
mm-hmm.
and to everyone else,
to everyone who is just open and willing. There's definitely a lot of
open-minded.
Yeah. To all the support.
The ones who don't support. I mean, for example, let's just take our parents, for example. At the end of the day, the non-support really came from a good place to begin with. Like,
people
it wasn't
challenge.
Out of malice.
Challenge in a good way. Challenge to, like,
right.
make you go to that next level. Yeah. I mean, in the moment, I don't appreciate you, but looking
mm-hmm.
back, I'm like, I need to go back and thank that person.
All right. So, last section. So these questions are really short. You could answer them as short as you want or as long as you want. Cool.
Mm-hmm.
Person who most influenced you in what you're doing today?
My dad.
Okay.
Tito
Each
Ada.
Other.
Oh!
No, but so I'm the winning twin that said each other. It's like, even now, like we only started living together like the past couple months. I had another roommate before this, but like even just being in the same space with her again, because we hadn't lived together since we were like obviously like 18 or whatever before we went to college.
That's a long time, and then to come back, wow.
And so it's just really nice to have this like person who's basically the same as you anyway and thinks exactly like you to touch base on ideas all the time and shut you down without, like, worrying about hurting your feelings. And it's just, I think we've been able to get as far as we've wanted to. And I think for all four of us, we've been able to get as far as we wanted to because we've had this, like, very direct connection with people that were, like, push us and criticize us and challenge us.
It's our family,
us.
Man.
Yeah, it's family.
Like, yeah, good, bad, and ugly.
Yeah, and I think
that's it.
Because the four of us at least understand each other in a level that, like, our parents don't, it's this extra, like, go take that Michelin star. Go get a Michelin.
If you were like, I'm going to do this, I'd be like, you go, girl, from Wisconsin. I'm cheering you on.
Yeah. Wait, who was the tita you mentioned?
Well, I said tita Odette because she's literally the best cook in our family, and she makes, she does duk duk, like.
She's that line item.
She's like the creator of him.
She is that authentic Filipino person, and you ask her how you make something, what you put in it, and she just has the most authentic answer.
You're gonna go dig a hole, you're gonna put some vinegar in.
She will make
potatoes,
yeah.
You put the dirt back on top.
She will make like 20 dishes when she's inviting 5 people, like 10 people over for dinner.
Yeah.
So I would just say are just what, like, just creating this huge, call it love of cooking and entertaining is from her.
Like, we want to make her proud. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like, we got it from her.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So usually I ask this question as best tool for cooking, but considering the very different backgrounds you have, I'm going to reword this question. So the best tool you've ever purchased for your craft and however you define your craft. What?
I have this, I'm going to grab it real quick.
Yeah, actually good, because I put like links to the show notes if people want to buy it.
Dimbla Paolo gave me this book and he found out that I was like semi-interested in Filipino tattoos. He bought me this book, Filipino Tattoos, Ancient to Modern by Lane.
Oh, it's by Lane, okay.
Yeah,
oh,
so
yeah.
Lane.
I met him this past week.
Yeah. So that's like my next goal in life is to meet him. But I have used this book. This book in combination with a Baybayin, kind of like a how to read Baybayin from Christian Kabuai, like
the
two main
players.
Have you met these people?
I haven't met them.
Oh
I
my gosh! You
should
have met them at Santa.
You should have just gone to Santa.
Yeah, but they're like the two books that I've gotten from both of them have influenced everything I have made since, for like the past 4 years, let's say.
Oh, snap.
And because of those, it's allowed me to really push myself and learn as much as I wanted to. And create everything that I've created. So those are my favorite tools that I've done.
Cool.
I just want to give a shout out to hashtag Filipino food movement. Because if it wasn't for that, like, we would literally
we
be
would
nowhere.
Be.
We started just making, we just wanted to try a few recipes because we had this supper club idea. And
it
we took
with a crazy idea.
Yeah, we took some pictures of it, and we were like, cool, but we did hashtag Filipino food movement, and Joanne, like, reposted it on her thing, and then we got, like, I don't know, 150 likes, people noticed it, and that's literally where it began, so that's what I would say is my critical tool, is
purchase,
literally.
No. It has to be a purchase tool.
Oh.
The phone that we used.
Whatever took the pictures or whatever you used to
Let's
type it
Let's
give
a shout out to the iPhone 5 or whatever was out at that time.
Yeah.
That's really what started it all for us. So.
That's a fair one. I think people underestimate the power that they already have in their hands. Like, some people wait till they get the DSLR, learn. This was
exactly.
Me. Like, I need to learn how to take photos. And when I finally met a photographer, he's like, dude, you have one of the most powerful cameras in your hand right now.
So I will actually give a shout out to Steve Jobs for letting you reach millions of people on your phone.
True. Okay.
Ours would be our food truck. I mean, that thing.
Big purchase.
You know what? It was under $10,000. It's actually cheaper than that. Well, without anything in it, with like bare minimum in it. But no, that food truck has so many nostalgic memories for Matt and I. Good, bad, and really ugly siblings. Yet again,
absolutely.
We're siblings to start with.
Yeah.
But no, it's just like, God, we started there. It's so funny to think about like what we used to do to where we are now.
Yeah.
It just
How long have you guys had it?
4 years.
Jeez,
struck
really
for four
good.
Years
yeah.
And this November 2 years with our brick and mortar, which it's gonna turn a profit eventually. I keep
it'll get
so,
there,
yeah.
For sure.
But the truck is what's carried us, and it's like,
that's
oh my
cool.
God, it's It's our baby. It's our little ratchet baby. Yeah.
Awesome. Okay. Three food ingredients to describe yourself.
Soy sauce, garlic, and vinegar.
Damn.
that's like...
Garlic, onion, ginger.
Tamarind. Batis. Bagong.
Yeah, this group really did the fundamentals. Not a single one,
yeah,
like...
Yeah, it would happen if Alex didn't go first.
Really?
I'm like, I don't know.
That's just what we... When people are like, what are your main ingredients? I'm like, soy sauce, whatever.
I had one person once go, truth, integrity. I was like, well, hold on.
Well, I appreciate that. It's not... Can you be a little more superficial here?
Okay, I don't know. Maybe this answer might double up with yours, Katrina, but we'll see. If you had to recommend a single resource for the common person to consume to be a better person, whether that's a documentary, a movie, a show, a book, whatever, a podcast episode, whatever,
this
what would it be?
Every Paulo
Espanola. Oh, you're not getting paid. You're not getting paid to say this. What would that resource be?
Oh. I say the Cooked documentary on Netflix.
Cooked documentary. Okay.
It's like a 5-episode series. Life changing.
That's the one with the glasses guy.
Michael
Pollan.
Pollan.
It was Pollan.
That's it, yeah.
Okay, cool.
One.
I'm going to go on the same path. I'm going to say Mind of a Chef, specifically season 1 with David Chang.
Okay.
That's what kind of completely opened my eyes to all of experimenting with food. David Chang did a lot of modernizing of like Korean, and he did Japanese, and that I watched that before we started Dimpla, and that's what kind of opened my mind to what Dimpla could be. So all of the Netflix food documentaries.
Okay.
All right, I'm gonna do kind of like a cop out answer. It's not, but it is, just because I can't think of like one. But just the new Filipino Kitchen, just because like, we're all here because of it, one. But two, if you read our stories, they're so different. They're so similar, and they're so different at the same time. And I think that, like, that in one ethnic group, that really goes to show, like, how vast and how close we all are. You know what I mean? I guess it's just the contrast on both extremes. So that's what I'm going to go with, just because I cannot think of one thing.
Awesome. So if you can't think of one thing, this last question is going to be definitely very, very hard then.
Thanks.
If Jackie emailed you and said you can only write a single line for your story in the book, and you were the only author to tell about your whole life's work up until this point, what would that line read?
I know exactly what it is.
Because you wrote it.
Then maybe that's why.
You replied with like 2 paragraphs. I was like, well, that's going to be...
I read that too? At these dinners, we hope that our guests who walk in as complete strangers will feel like they've become our cup Amelia.
Okay.
Aw, that was good. I'm going to clap for that one out loud.
Okay.
Find your people, work together to follow your passion, and the world will open up.
Okay.
Ooh, good. Always know where you came from, but never underestimate where you can go.